She's April.
And she's Molly.
And we are
the Book Besties.
I'm hunting down Matt Denneman.
I will find you, and I will tackle you to the ground and make you join us on Book Besties.
Hell, I'll make you a cocktail. I don't care.
Molly, shut up and let me talk.
But it reminded me of any heavy petting scene that I've ever had in high school.
If you masturbate, it will make you gay.
Mm-hmm.
I hate you.
No, you don't. You love me.
Listen, I am so tired and I need sleep. But I have binge watched my way through almost the entire season of The Pit because of you. And I don't like it. Why am I still watching it?
You do like it because the drama is so intense. You're like, oh my God, what's going to happen next?
I like Noah Wyle's beard. That's what I like.
Oh my God. It is just, there's so much going on. And there's so much. And if you guys haven't been watching.
It's such a recycle from every other medical show.
Right. But it also, for some reason, feels fresh in ways I can't explain.
Because they show penises and boobs.
No, because it's not Grey's Anatomy and it's not the same 12 people over and over again.
I mean, it is the same 12 people over and over again, but they're not fucking in on call rooms. So there's that.
That's also valid. Oh my God, no, that show.
I'm so mad at you because I don't want to like it. I don't want to stop watching it. So I feel like we need to get Katie to watch it because I need to know how realistic it is because, you know,
I've seen a lot of TikToks of like, of nurse creators.
I have too.
Talk about the validity of that show and how good it is.
But it's all recycled. Okay. There's the head doctor who has PTSD and, you know, whatever, he's grumpy. There's the resident who had a fling with him back in the day, but she's a total baller and they've been able to make it work. There's the resident who's an addict who's and also stealing from hiding, the hospital.
Who's also, she's hiding her pregnancy from everyone.
Well, she, yes. Yes, she is. There's the nurse that's like, badass, been here 30 years in the war zone, literally takes a punch
over your shit.
Yeah. And then there's the
literally got hit in the face. Oh my God.
There's the legacy who's the med student who's, you know, royalty.
That poor girl, she just needs to go and be a kid.
They have an active shooter, which is a thing that Grey's did. They have people dying during COVID, which is a thing that Grey's did. I mean, just recycled. The only difference is that they say fuck, that you see nipples because it's on HBO, and in the most recent episode I watched, I saw a full penis.
Congratulations.
Yes. And it I have seen penises before. I had to change a lot of penis diapers. It's not new. I also am married to a man who has a penis.
You're married to a man? No way.
I am.
I didn't know Tom was a man. That is new information.
I don't think he's going to appreciate that you said that.
It was a joke. Chill out, Thomas.
Oh my gosh.
So this week I'm hosting.
Yeah.
And we are covering, this is actually our last non-author book this year.
I know.
Isn't that weird?
It's crazy.
So I've been saying late night at the Telegraph Club all month.
Why? It's last night.
Because I'm dyslexic and an idiot.
Well, you're not an idiot. I don't have dumb friends. I've said that to you multiple times. Stop picking on my best friend.
It is Last Night at the Telegraph Club by Mandy Lowe. This book.
Melinda Lowe.
Thank you. Oh my God.
And this is a library copy. Support local libraries.
She's won a lot of awards, guys.
Yeah,
the National Book Award.
Yeah.
She won the... Is this the Pulitzer Prize?
Mm-mm. Maybe. I mean,
Michael?
She won the Prince Award.
Prince Award, the Stonewall Book Awards, Youth Literature Winner Award. Like,
this won the Prince, which is ALA's book award for queer YA books.
This is also a banned book, guys. read banned books? Of course
it is. If it's about gay people, they're going to ban it.
So would you like a synopsis?
So much so.
Okay. It is Lily Hu's senior year of high school. The year is 1954, and she lives in San Francisco, Chinatown specifically. And she's been keeping a secret, even from herself. But as she tries to find herself, the times and her family keep pushing her back into the darkness. Let's talk about Lily's life and her time at the Telegraph Club. Huh?
That's the whole synopsis?
I...
You told me nothing about this book.
Lily's gay.
Is she?
She's Chinese. She's in the closet.
Yeah. Okay.
There's the Red Scare going. We're going to talk about it, man. Okay. Melinda Lowe is new to pod, but she is not new to the writing world. Last Night at the Telegraph Club is her sixth fiction novel out of seven. She has seven published books right now. She has been part of four nonfiction novels, which are about writing, queerness, all kinds of different things. And she has several different short stories on her website, which I'll put the link to all that in the things, guys. She has won several awards for this book. What did you think of Melinda and her writing?
I think her writing is fine. It historical fiction is not my favorite. I didn't mind the historical aspects of this one because it wasn't, you know, the typical woman walking away.
Right.
I don't think she had
women hiding in the dark instead.
Yeah. Kissing. I don't think it was poorly written. I just think that there were parts of the story that I don't feel were relevant. And I know we're going to talk about that later, so I don't want to give too much away. I mean, she's not bad. This is not my favorite book we've read this season. I mean, that's...
No, you know. And I wouldn't say that either. But I feel like she's a solid writer. I feel like she's good at what she does. She writes clear, concise. There is no... Every word she used on this page was needed. These pages were needed, I feel like. I don't feel like she was...
I don't necessarily agree. I don't necessarily agree with that, but...
We'll get to that.
But I don't feel like it was poorly written. Like, we've read books that are really poorly written, and that's this problem was. I think there was just some of the story that I wasn't on board with.
Makes sense. When I say I love historical fiction, this is the kind of book I talk about. Well-researched, well-written, and tells a story that we don't always hear.
Yeah.
Melinda Lowe takes us back in time to 1950s Chinatown. What did you think of Lily's life and how the author presented her times to us?
So I really feel like she did do a great job with researching. And I listened to the audiobook for this one. That's how I read this one. Same. And there's an author's note at the end where she talks about, you know, the research that she did and why she chose to do this topic. And, you know, when we think about San Francisco, it has been a queer friendly city. I know that my uncle, he went to San Francisco when he was in his early 20s or late teens. It was after he graduated high school for sure. And he went to San Francisco and, you know, I mean, it's a gay friendly place.
It was a symbol. It definitely was a symbol for the community for a long time.
But the story we always hear is of gay men. We don't hear of gay women, and we don't hear about people of color. And so I feel like the decision to make this story focused on queer women and a person of color, particularly a Chinese woman, it was smart and it was different. And the reason that I don't usually like historical fiction is because it's so repetitive. It's so much the same story. And that's one of the reasons why I liked Heather Webb's book and why I liked Addison Armstrong's book, because I felt like they were telling stories that, like, I was not reading. And maybe Addison was telling a little bit of a story that we've read because it's a woman on the front. But the story of Addison a person writes
is so...
It's so good. It was the story of it being a librarian that I connected with, and then the other part being the first class of females into the Naval Academy. That was really cool. No, no, not. I was talking about the other one.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah. And Heather's book where she was talking about a women gang in London.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, like, my those... God. Would you never get that kind of stuff? No.
That's the kind of historical fiction that I can enjoy. And this wasn't bad. It just wasn't. We're getting that part in the season, Molly, where I have read so many books that I'm mm-hmm. just like, you know, yeah. like I've read 53 books already this year.
Yeah. I'm at my point where I'm like, I'm done reading for a little bit and my mm-hmm. brain needs a timeout because I can't even put words on the page right now.
Yeah.
Because we've read so much.
Yeah. And I mean, we're about to take a break, but we have 3 episodes left after this one. And then we do have a short break and then we have to have all the stuff ready for Columbus. Yeah.
Barely a break.
Because we got to be ready for Columbus. And I'm doing Smut Girl Summer with Nurse Katie again.
My thing with this book is we get such a highlighted side of Chinatown that we normally don't get from. Now, mind you, most historical fiction writers look like me. You know what yeah. I mean? They're white women. So we're getting a different story. We're getting a different timeline. We're getting different sense of history, which I really like, especially talking about the communist scare and whatnot, which we're yeah. going to talk about.
Yeah. We usually do get that story in historical fiction, but it's more about what's happening in Russia and less about what's yeah. happening in
yeah.
China.
Yeah. From early as chapter 5, we are seeing that Lily is hiding a part of herself. She sneakily reads a book about two women at the drugstore. She snags a photo from a paper of a woman dressed as a man from the paper. She isn't hiding a crush or the fact she likes to read. She's realized she likes girls.
Mm-hmm.
We go through the whole process with her of discovering her queerness in a time that it's not okay. How did you feel the author handled this? Did she do it well?
Yeah, I mean, I felt like this was a really good, like, I don't want to say coming out story. I mean, Lily does come out, but I think this is a more coming to self story.
Yeah.
Like coming of age in that way.
Finding oneself.
Yeah. I think she did a good job slowly revealing it. And one of the things I really appreciated about this was the struggle that Lily felt as being a good Chinese daughter.
Yes.
And how shameful it would have been for her family if she were queer.
Yeah.
Her realization and feeling that shame, mm-hmm. it's not something that I can relate to, but I have seen students and I've seen, you know, friends go through this where they're like, I can't be who I am because my family will be ashamed of me.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, that felt authentic.
Yeah. And we see it later when she's like confronted with this situation by her parents, you know, mm-hmm. and her mom goes, we don't have any gays in this family, right?
Yes.
And we'll talk more about that later in the episode, but the point I'm trying to get at is even then Lily is owning herself.
Yeah.
Owning who she is and what she is. And yeah. we see her slowly get this confidence. And part of that is from her time with Kath. Part of that is the more she reads, the more she discovers who she is, the more she sees other queer women, the more she's mm-hmm. like, oh, this is okay. These people live healthy, full lives. They're not hurting anyone. She realizes that there's nothing wrong with it. It's just how others view it what is what makes it wrong.
Yeah.
And that's the big, that snippet right there. How what I'm doing isn't wrong, how others view me is wrong, takes forever for kids to come to grasps with when they're in the closet. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's the big chunk right there.
Yeah.
And I lost my train of thought, but you get my
point. For me, it's sort of, I can relate it to how I feel about like religious trauma of purity culture in the 90s mm-hmm. and the early 2000s, because that's, you know, the culture that I grew up in. And I felt a lot of shame because wasn't completely pure. According to
their definition of it,
to their definition. And my husband and I lived together before we were married. We had sex before we were married and all these things. And I actually remember attending a talk at a women's retreat, and they talked about if you masturbate, it will make you gay. If you're a woman and you masturbate, it will make you gay because your husband will never be able to please you, and you'll start being attracted to women because, you'll be used to touching those body parts.
That doesn't math for me.
It doesn't to me either. But for the longest time, I had a lot of like guilt, like, oh gosh, I have a vibrator.
Am I turning myself gay?
Am I going to be gay? Because...
Guess what? It didn't work.
I'm still maybe still if you like the peen.
Go a little bit longer. Try it out for a little bit longer.
You know what I think the problem is? This is what I think the problem is. I think those women's husband did not know what a clit was. And so they probably had never had a really good orgasm. And so, yeah. Your husband will never be able to please you because he doesn't know how to find the clit.
So. I really think that that's like, this is just my opinion. Okay. I think that that variation of Christians that are like always harping on sexuality and sex and whatnot mm-hmm. are the ones that have never really been like fully like cleared the decks and like fully had like a mind clearing, body clearing orgasm where they're just like, oh, thank God.
Well, they haven't because that's shameful. Like, it's not.
They should, because I swear to God, it would fix a lot of things for some of them.
If anybody has, like, this religious trauma from their past, I'm going to link below this content creator on TikTok. Her name is Jubilee, and she talks about purity culture and shares people's stories. And it's just fucking mind-blowing, the things that we were told in youth group that are not true. Like, they're not true.
No.
Like, I'm very well pleased by my husband, and I am not a lesbian. And I had a vibrator before Tom.
Wow, look at you.
I still have a vibrator, which, you know, it's just used between, you know.
Differently. Yeah,
differently these days. Oh, I was also told that you couldn't use toys. That was showing if you wanted to use toys, that was showing that you didn't respect your spouse because you should be only getting pleasure from him. But
I'm not gonna touch that.
I'm not gonna say what I want to say because it will just be really inappropriate. But that's not true, friends. just not true.
So let's talk about language in this book.
Yeah, that feels like a good pivot.
So this is actually a two-pronged question. One, we are faced with the fact that language in this times, we're hearing phrases like, this is going to be triggering, friends, that use phrasings like Oriental and Negress in this mm-hmm. book. Okay. Mm-hmm. The author's doing that to show the times. But on the other side of this, we are seeing the diversity in language in Chinatown. We see different families using a mix of Cantonese, Mandarin, and Chinese. And even with some of these language, they're even different, using different variations within that. Like, this mm-hmm. is throughout the book we're seeing this. The author herself, in the author's notes, uses the expression Changlish. Do you think with these two different variations of language and how she used them, it helps set this setting?
Oh, 100%. I actually really liked that she brought in some Chinese language and then like translated it for us. I don't like it when there's like a a common Spanish phrase in a book and they don't translate it. Like, I don't speak Spanish, so I'm going to need you to tell me what it means. I'll Google it, though. But there wasn't just language about people's race, because you did mention Oriental and Negress, but the languages that were used for the lesbian community, they used the word dyke, which is offensive. There were butch and femmes, and we don't really do that anymore. I mean, even when we were growing up, the term lipstick lesbian, right? Yeah. So like, she's a lipstick lesbian.
Dyke was still like really offensive even when you're growing up.
Yeah. Yeah. But like the term lipstick lesbian, like my neighbors growing up was a lesbian couple, and I was told they were lipstick lesbians because neither of them were masculine. Yeah. Sure. That's what we'll go with. Masculine's probably better.
Masculine presenting. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's just not, true, guys. You can be a lesbian
Have a title.
Yeah. Right. You can be a lesbian because you prefer women. You don't have to be butch. You don't have to be dyke. Those words are not okay.
Right. And I think, so going to more to the offensive language, anytime someone called Lily little China girl, the Oriental girl, China doll, like the Oriental, anytime those words came up, I cringed a little bit for her.
Yeah.
Like, but I know different because of the times were different, but I couldn't imagine being in her skin.
No, me either. But see, this is why I will die on the hill that To Kill a Mockingbird is still a good text to teach kids. Because the N-word is used repeatedly in To Kill a Mockingbird because it was the cultural language of the time. You are supposed to feel uncomfortable and offended by it. And I think Melinda Lowe did a really good job making us feel uncomfortable and offended by the language.
Yeah. And that's
on Lily's behalf.
And that's what she wanted us to feel.
100%.
She wanted us to feel Lily's outsiderness. She wanted us to feel how difficult and hard this is for Lily and how much of an outsider she is.
Yeah. And she doesn't really have a community, right? Because in the Chinese community, she won't be welcome because she's gay. In the gay community, she's not welcome because she's Chinese.
Yep. Yep.
It's just, she doesn't have a place.
She doesn't have a place. Yep. It's complex. It's really complex.
The community of the women at the Telegraph Club are much more accepting of her, but they still other her.
Like, calling her China doll.
Yeah. We don't get many Orientals around here. Does she speak English? That phrase was said repeatedly in this book.
Does she speak English was like so gross.
And never to her. Never to her. They ask Kat, does she speak English? Instead of just saying, do you speak English?
And like, anytime someone come up to them and be like, oh, there was an Oriental girl here the other day. I think she's from X, Y, and Z. Do you know her?
Right.
Ugh.
No.
So we start this book with a prologue. Lily is 13 and she is watching the Miss China contest with her friends and family. This sets us up actually for the whole book. The mix of American ideals with their family's culture from China. There is a constant tug in this book when it comes to being American from the Hu family side, and being American is important. No, what? This constantly tugs in this book when it comes to being American for the Hua family. There we go. Ha! Being American is important, but so is being Chinese still. With the times and the Red Scare looming, how do they keep both sides of themselves straight? What did you think of the complexity of the times and how the Hua family managed it?
So I think that the best example of how they were trying to balance their Chinese culture with their American culture is the beauty pageant.
Yep.
We see it at the beginning and we see it, you know, there's a plot point of Lily's best friend,
Shirley
is going to be in the contest. And good Chinese girls would never be on display like that.
Because they wear bikinis.
Right. But American girls did that. So we need to kind of find a happy medium.
Yeah.
The other thing was the community in Chinatown was very happy to play up for the tourists, right? Mm-hmm. So we're going to have traditional Chinese dishes and we're going to have all these things. And don't they open fortune cookies in this book? Was that this book?
Yes. Yes.
And you know that fortune cookies
were American made.
Yeah. They don't exist in China.
No. They even mentioned in the book that they were created.
They were for the tourists. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think that you see a lot of that, but there's this desire to still be part of their native culture of China. Right. Like, for example, Lily's mom, it kind of bugs her that she doesn't get to have the rights of the wife of the oldest son mm-hmm. by being like the head of the family in China. But she doesn't get to do that because the Communist Party has taken over control of China.
Yeah. Yeah. And you see this diversity in her mom's upbringing versus her dad's upbringing. Yeah. Her mom is American-born Chinese and her dad came to America for schooling. Mm-hmm. And you see how they treat Lily and how she's growing up differently. One has a much stronger hand while one's more laid back until like things become heavy, mm-hmm. right? And Lily's mom wants nothing more than to keep her in the shell and keep her protected because it's risking her father, not mm-hmm. anybody else. It is risking her father because they took her father's papers.
Yeah.
And that adds just this other layer of trauma and craziness.
You know, I don't think this is in your notes, but I thought while reading this book, I thought that her aunt was going to come out and tell her. I thought her aunt was, yes, maybe take her to her house still, but I thought her aunt was going to say, I was like you when I was younger until I found a good Chinese boy to settle down with.
That's where I thought it was going to. And that's why I thought we were getting the subplots.
That's what I thought too. And because we didn't get that, they weren't relevant.
Confused. Yeah.
I was confused. Yeah. Because I really thought they were leaning very heavily into women don't do science. Women don't do STEM, which is fucking
women
ridiculous.
Women don't do a lot of things.
And her aunt was a computer for a rocket company. Yeah. Like,
that's amazing. Yeah. So great lead in. I want to actually talk about Lily's relationships now.
Okay.
So I have a couple I want to go through. Let's start with Shirley. Shirley is Lily's best friend. Her family owns the local Chinese restaurant that the tourists mm-hmm. like to frequent. Excuse me. I want to call it the Golden Dragon, but that feels wrong.
No, it's called Golden something Fox. East.
Palace?
It's something East.
I don't remember.
It doesn't matter.
Damn it. But her best friend, Shirley, is actually secretly dating a college boy who's in the Communist Party, or mm-hmm. suspected to be. And they're starting to separate as friends because life is leading them in different directions. Shirley mm-hmm. knows she's going to become a wife soon, and that's not the path Lily's on. Lily's going to go to college. Lily's going to have a different life. Mm-hmm. What did you think of their relationship and their dynamic in this book?
They are the perfect example of friends from high school because of circumstance. Yep. I don't foresee these girls being long-term friends. They aren't the kind of friends that stay forever. First of all, if your friend ever looks at you and tells you, you can't be this way, then that is not your friend. That is gross and inappropriate and ugly. But beyond that, what Shirley was doing was also not okay. She was disobeying her parents by being out with the boy who was linked to communism. Mm-hmm. She was disobeying her parents by being out with the boy unchaperoned. Mm-hmm. She definitely kissed him. Lily saw that happen, which was not allowed to be happening. So it's like remove the speck playing from your own eye before you talk about the speck in mine. Like, you know?
Right. Like, Shirley only felt she had the high road because she was with in a hetero relationship. That's
right.
The only thing that made Shirley feel like she was in the right in this situation.
She's not any better according to their culture.
No. No. So this is perfect, actually. Next, we meet Kathleen Kath, mm-hmm. or Kath as we knew her, Miller. She mm-hmm. is one of Lily's white classmates,
mm-hmm.
and they kind of start a secret relationship, and that mm-hmm. grows pretty quickly in this book. Let's talk about them now. What do you think of this pairing?
I liked them. It's definitely a good first love. I don't see mm-hmm. that going the distance because it's not, that's not what we were set up to get. But I did like the two of them together. Please don't have sex at school. Please don't have sex at school. It's gross. But they have sex at school.
It reminded me of any heavy petting scene that I've ever had in high school. Not at physical school, but
that you had in high school?
I've had some heavy petting scenes.
Okay, I thought, I was confused. I thought you meant
during high school, not at high school.
And then I understood that you meant it was actually you. It was, they have sex at school. Don't do that. Please don't have sex at school.
Don't have sex at school.
It's so dirty. The amount of kids that I've caught having sex at school is far too many. It's just far too many.
The number should be zero, by the way.
The number should be zero, and it isn't. I've personally caught at least 6 kids have sex at school.
At least it's an even number.
I went to dinner. I'm sorry. You have got to hear the story. I went to dinner last night with Tom and Sam, and I may have partaken prior to going.
In a garden gummy?
Yeah. And Sam started counting the word ball. It's a long story how we got there, but every time he said ball, and at one point
he giggled because he's a boy.
Yes. And at one point he said 7 balls. I might just stop there. And I was like, that's usually what I do. And Tom goes, I'm so glad it's an odd number. And I fucking lost it. I was like, this is such a mess. Anyway, back to the story. I liked their relationship.
I really liked their relationship because it really highlighted the divide in the times mm-hmm. for them as students, right? We got mm-hmm. to see, like, the scene in the cafeteria. No, sorry. Yes, I guess it was the cafeteria, but it was the dance. So when they were doing the dance, yes. and all the Black kids were hanging out together, and all the mm-hmm. white kids were together, and all the Chinese Americans were together, and all the girls were dancing in one group, and all the girls were dancing in one group, and none of them were, like, mm-hmm. intermingling at all. And it was just like, oh, this racism just everywhere. It's not just in.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
Here's something about Kath that I was surprised about. I know that she was friends with Jean, who had been caught kissing another girl at school. When Lily asks if she knows anybody like the women in the book who are in a relationship with mm-hmm. each other, she says, yes, my friend Jean is like that, but she doesn't admit to her being like that. And I wasn't sure that we were going to get a love story between Lily and Kath, because you can be straight and have queer friends.
Mm-hmm. Happens all the time.
And you can be straight, have queer friends, and go to a gay bar. Like, I've been to a gay bar. I'm not gay, but I've been there. I've been to a gay bar.
So the last group of the people I want to talk about is Lily's family.
Mm-hmm.
We get very distinct stories from her mom, her dad, and her Aunt Judy separately in this book that are past timelines.
Yeah.
I want to hear what you thought about these chapters and how you felt about it, because it's an interesting choice that we're getting the past through their point of views and only their point of views. So why don't you take it off? Go ahead.
It was so unnecessary. I understand she was trying to build out the world, but it didn't come to any sort of conclusion. It didn't help the story. Like, if there would have been a story where her aunt was with women in college.
Right.
And then, you know, it was a phase, as her mom, as Lily's mom said it was a phase, and she found a good man and got married, and then that was all over. Then if that were the case, these backstories would have made sense, but they don't, because there was no bow tie at the end.
I think the only reason we're getting history of this family is so that we have a reason to trust the aunt when we send her off. That's the only reason I could think of why we would include all this information. But it made no sense to me. It also was a bell ringer for me. Like, I get it. We need to understand that her family struggled. I get it. We need the history. But good Lord. A whole fucking chapter?
There were several chapters. It was tedious and unnecessary. Yes. And this book is kind of a thick daddy.
It is a thick mamma jamma. I actually listened to this on Libby, Support Local Libraries, gang gang.
I think that's how I listened to it as well. Yeah, it's like 400 pages. It didn't need to be.
This is 415 right here.
In the paperback edition?
In the paperback. This page is 415.
It didn't need to be. And I don't like that there were these timelines thrown throughout. It didn't help the story.
It helped me a little bit, just because I was like, wait, what?
And then Start with the timeline. Don't repeat it at the billion end. Times.
The Telegraph Club isn't just a taboo place, but it's also a symbol in this book for community and not living in fear. Being queer or gay in these times were considered unnatural for women of the times. And to have this place to them was very important. We learn in the author's note that there were several locations like this.
Yeah.
And she uses that as a reference. Yeah. What did you think of the Telegraph Club?
I mean, I thought it was great. They use the term male impersonator, so it's basically drag, but they don't call it that. And I never really thought about there being women who do drag as men, because that's not really what we think of when we think of drag. You know, we think of men being women.
Right. We don't think of women dressing up as dudes.
No, but there are plenty of women that are
masculine. And it actually was a lot more of a bigger trend for a while before, like in the past, like this time frame, women dressing up as men was a trend for a while before.
Do you think that it's changed because we can wear pants now and it just be normal? We're just allowed to wear pants.
I wonder if some of the women, like Tommy, were having gender dysphoria and dressing as a man made them feel more at peace in their body. And the only way they could identify with that gender dysphoria, this is, of course, just me assuming. I'm assuming that they just, being on that stage and in those clothes and presenting as a man makes them feel different in a way.
She was living her life as Tommy. That was her stage name. She wasn't going by Teresa, which was her
given name. Yeah. Birth name. Yeah.
And
so I didn't have a question.
So maybe she was actually trans. Maybe she was trans.
And I don't know. It's insinuated that she lives as Tommy. Like, her live-in girlfriend, the girl she's living with, and the one that Lily's kind of befriended, only calls them Tommy. You know, refers to them as Tommy. Tommy only wears masculine clothes all the time. So it could be, you know, and we just didn't have the language for it, maybe?
Yeah, actually, I was going to say, I can't remember if we read something like this or if I saw something like this. I don't even remember, but just the discussion of how the language exists now, to say that someone can use they, them pronouns, which wouldn't have been a thing then, right? Right. Tommy was a woman, so she went by she. But I do remember, I can't remember where I read that, like, be lucky that you have the vocabulary language today.
Right.
Yeah. But when I lived in Texas, I read an article about a transgender woman who had recently passed away and was in her like late 70s, and no one knew she was trans. She had a husband, so I'm assuming her husband knew.
Obviously, he might have known.
But no one knew. Like, her whole family, like his extended family, they all knew her as a woman.
I mean,
and I thought,
age and when she transitioned,
and there wasn't, there wasn't a transition. There wasn't a taking of hormones. There wasn't a top surgery. There wasn't a gender confirmation surgery. There was none of that. Like, she was living her life as a woman and completely still atomically a man. Masculine.
Huh.
And
nobody knew.
Nobody knew. And the pictures that, that accompanied the article, I want to say this was in like People, or not People, sorry, USA, no.
If you can
find it,
we'll
put it in Time or Newsweek. It was in one of those.
If you can find it, we'll put it in the links.
Okay. I'll try. But it's been a long time. Years. It was when we lived in Texas. Before James, even. So it's been quite a while. But I thought, well, that is really fascinating. Because at some point, her husband had to know.
Right.
Because we're assuming at some point that they were intimate with each other.
Love, man. Mm-hmm. Love. Yeah. It conquers all. We already talked about the flashbacks and stuff. I'm going to skip this question.
Okay.
Because we really talked about it enough. Like,
I'm fine with that.
Being Chinese or foreign at all in this book, you get this underlining sense of fear. And a knot sits in the bottom of your stomach. Lily's father is not American-born like her mother, and when he refuses to give the name of a boy he treats at the Chinese hospital, the government takes his papers. The threat of being deported looms over the Hu family. Did the author do a good job highlighting this part of the 1950s history?
Yes. Yes. And I think it's relevant
to
what we've got going on today.
I can't help but feel this is really timely right now with everything that's going on. And did you see that there's a producer trying to work with Homeland Security to make a fast track program for citizenship? All you have to do is participate in a game show.
What's the game show?
It's Survivor-like style.
Of course it is.
So, you know, just the fucking Hunger Games.
Yep.
We're not doing this, people. Okay. The author's note is full of Melinda Lowe's research. And what did you think about this and her research?
I mean, I definitely think it helped fill everything out. And it really made me appreciate the work that she did for it.
Yeah, it definitely helped me appreciate this book more. And rounded the book up to a 3.25 for me, honestly.
I still gave it a 3. And the only reason I gave it a 3 was because she didn't figure out a way to wrap up the stories of the other characters to make it, you know, more concrete together.
Yeah. There's this line at the end that I would like to read. Lily's story is my attempt to draw some of this history out from the margins, to unerase the stories of women like Crystal Yang, Meryl Wu, and Dr. Margaret Chung. She admits it's a fictionalized world. She just wants people to remember that there's always been gay Chinese people. There's always been women in science that were Chinese. There's always, these people have always been here. You just ignore them.
Yeah.
Final thoughts, April Goodreads, did I miss anything?
I gave it a 3. I don't really have any other thoughts I haven't shared. I think you did a good job writing the questions.
Thank you.
I read through your questions before we filmed and I was just like, damn, these are good.
I thought about this.
Yeah, I feel like this is a book you can sit with for a while.
Yeah.
I definitely think if you are like, because this is YA, if you are a teen and you are a person of color and you are queer, this is a good book for you.
Mm-hmm. If you're,
I don't check any of those categories.
If you're questioning your sexuality, this is a great book for you because of that.
Actually, I do want to say one
thing. History lovers.
I want to say one thing about that, Molly, since you said if you're someone questioning your sexuality. So when I was a teacher in the mid 2000s,
mm-hmm.
My first teaching job for 3 years, I taught at a school that was a school for the performing and visual arts. We had a significant
number. I don't know what I thought you were going to say, but it was not performing arts. My brain is not working today. Continue.
I don't know either, but we had a significantly high percentage of queer students.
Mm-hmm.
It was not, we also had a lot of queer staff as well. I mean, we had arts teachers, right?
I mean, our performing arts school.
Right. Our principal.
Math.
Our principal, I was the yearbook teacher, and our principal made a point to tell me that we could not put queer couples in the yearbook. And I was like, you do know.
Time out. This is a performing arts school.
Mm-hmm. But it's also a school for the community. So it was located in the middle of the West Tampa projects.
Tampa.
Yeah. And it was both a community school for the kids that lived in downtown Tampa and mm-hmm. a performing and visual arts school for kids that were not in that neighborhood. It's a magnet school is what it's called. But I was not allowed to put queer couples in the yearbook. I did it very sneakily. I would take pictures of girls holding hands, and that would be the only thing you would see would be two people holding hands. You wouldn't see anything else. At the time, Florida had a law on the books that said you could be fired as an educator for anything that was considered immoral. So my coworkers who were gay wouldn't even talk about their significant others because, God forbid, they would be fired because that was immoral.
That's awful.
But what I wanted to say is I had a lot of students come out to me. I'm not sure why they felt safe with me, but I'm thankful that they did. A lot of them were asking for book recommendations and they just didn't exist. And I am forever grateful that there are books now that have queer people in them, especially historical fiction ones where it's like, hey, we've always existed. Because they've always existed. This isn't new.
They've always existed. Gay people have always been here. This isn't new. Like, look at the etchings in Egypt. Let's just use Egypt, for example, okay? Men were wearing makeup and jewelry.
Mm-hmm.
They were dressed differently. They have proof that people were dressing as transgender people all the time back then. Like, mm-hmm. come on, guys. Come on. I mean,
it's, yeah.
Several Native American cultures have language for a third gender. So
I just think that there need to be more books that are safe spaces for kids.
Agreed.
And not just that, but in the library world, we talk about mirrors. So it's important to have a mirror of reflection of yourself, but it's also important to have windows. It's important for books like this to exist so people who are straight can see queer people in a more positive light.
Agreed.
So I'm off my soapbox now.
Would you like to stand on it and talk about the next three books we have coming up?
I would. So June is going to be crazy because we have
three authors.
We have three episodes and three authors. That's it. That's all we have left of the season. We are going to start off with our friend Hazel Gaynor and her newest book, Before Dorothy. This book actually comes out in June. It's so gorgeous. I mean, it's gorgeous.
It's so freaking pretty.
And the sub headline, There's No Place Like Home. This is a story of Auntie M, from The Wizard of Oz. And
not the pretzel lady.
Yeah. And this comes out on June 17th. We have ARCs. Thank you so much to Berkeley for sending us these.
Heather. Why am I thinking Heather? Thanks, Heather.
They came from Hazel, but thank you, Berkeley, for sending us those.
Yes.
Then we are going to read The Betrayal of Thomas True by AJ West. I'm so excited
for this book.
So I've already started it. I'm actually reading both the books. So I've already started this one. So I want to tell a little bit about how we came across this book.
Yes, please.
AJ is a friend of Dr. Susie Edge, who we all know I'm obsessed with. And he is a writer in the UK. And he messaged us. He messaged us on Instagram and was just like, hey, I heard about you from Dr. Susie Edge. She said to maybe reach out to you. My book is actually going to be published for the first time in the US. This is the book, The Betrayal of Thomas True.
It's so good.
It's really good. It's historical fiction, and I'm telling you, it's really good. But I just want to say, this book is blurbed by Dr. Susie Edge, but it's also blurbed by Stephen Fry. So, I mean,
Stephen fucking Fry!
Come on. So anyway, I am really excited to talk to AJ. I actually just messaged him yesterday to tell him I was really enjoying this book. And he was like, oh, I can't wait to talk to you guys about it. So, and then we are going to wrap out the season with We Are the Match by Mary E. Roach. And again, this is another arc because this book doesn't come out until July 29th. So we're going to get her right at the end of our season. And then this book comes out this summer. Thank you so much to Montlake for sending us an arc copy of this. This one is a queer romanticy. So we've got queer romanticy, queer historical fiction, and historical fiction retelling kind of story. So that's what we've got. I'm so excited. I know, it's gonna be really great. I haven't actually talked to Mary other than through email yet. So I'll be interested to meet her. Yes. Me and too. Then in July, we will be at the Columbus Book Festival in Columbus, Ohio. It is through the Columbus Public Library, and they have this 2-day event, and we will be there both days.
We have two panels, guys.
We have a panel that's like romanticy-like on Saturday, and then on Sunday we have a historical fiction panel, and we're hoping to interview some other authors. We haven't talked about this yet, Molly. I'm hunting down Matt Denneman. So much so.
I am hunting you down, Matthew. I am going
she
to
She does not
you.
Mean that in a threatening way.
No, I'm not threatening you. I'm saying this in the most aggressively cute way possible. I will find you. And I will tackle you to the ground and make you join us on Book
Fest. Please know that she means this in a kind way. She's not like a stalker.
I'm so kind.
So... Gosh. Oh man, I don't know what to do with you. We haven't talked about this yet, but I'm assuming
kid leashes for like the theme parks.
Molly, shut up and let me talk. We haven't talked about this yet, but I am kind of thinking we're probably going to release a bonus episode this summer after the festival with like all the
wrap up.
Yeah. Or it'll come out in August before our season nine starts. See. I don't know, but we did plan season 9. We did that yesterday and today.
Y'all, wait till you see these books, gang.
Oh my gosh. It's going to be
I'm
good
so
one.
Excited.
If you're on StoryGraph, join our challenge. We'll do another one for season 9.
We'll put the link to our StoryGraph in the things too, because you guys do not want to miss when we release this list, because you're going to want to set your Libby schedule, because I tell you what, These books are popular books.
Popular.
Mm-hmm. They're going to be hard to get. You're going to be waiting a long time for them. Yes. And you want to play along at the home game, guys.
And join our Patreon, because our Patreon will help us go to Columbus and have some extra perks.
Yeah. Book club questions. Don't you want book club questions?
Right. And you get to ask us questions that we'll answer.
That's fun.
On the show, which is
hell
crazy.
I'll make you a cocktail. I don't care.
That's all I got.
We'll see you guys next time.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us on Book Festies. Don't forget to like and subscribe. The views discussed here are those of April and Molly, not those of anyone else. Today's book was The Last Night at the Telegraph Club by Melinda Lowe. Your book besties are Molly Bix and April Watkins, editing by Thomas Watkins, and music is Sleep Sweetly by Brigida. Don't forget to follow the book besties on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. If you'd like to contact book besties, please email us at bookbestiespod@gmail.com or visit our website, bookbestiespodcast.com. You can also support the book besties by joining our Patreon at Book Besties Podcast. Until next time, besties, get lost in your favorite book.